Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore Positive. We are positively into the holiday season. I had my first shot of eggnog this morning in my Royal Farms coffee. We're getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour Holiday Edition out. Trim up the tree. We're going to have Maryland Lottery scratch-offs to give away from the Maryland Lottery. Also, our friends at Jiffy Lube MultiCare powering Luke back and forth to Ravens and getting us into this Orioles offseason and this new election thing we've done here in America, amongst a bunch of other things. We will be all over the air eating crab cakes and talking about all sorts of things. No one I love having on the program more than this guy. I invited him on during that Baltimore v. Washington war last month during my birthday. And he's like, well, I'll come on now, but I got a book coming out. And I'm like, you always got a book coming out. Well, you don't always have a 50th book coming out. So I read up on this. John Feinstein is our defending champion of all things Baltimore, UMBC, and the Washington Post, and basketball. And I don't know where he stands on NIL, but I'm going to find out. He has written a new book. He has told me about this for the last, I don't know, with 3 years, John. How long you work on an Ivy League book? It feels like this isn't new news to me that you're doing this Ivy League thing because you have been discussing it with me for a couple of football seasons, I think, right?
Well, I did the research last season, Nestor. I came up with the idea prior to the 2023 season. I've always liked working with Ivy League athletes and coaches. It's almost a stereotype to say that they're smart, but they are smart. And they're good football players too. There's about 15 of them in the NFL right now. And that's sort of each year you have 12, 14, 15 Ivy Leaguers in the NFL. So they can play. And I enjoyed doing the book. It's called The Ancient Eight because the Ivy League has been eight teams forever and will be eight teams forevermore. Unlike other leagues, they're not going
Quite
to
a
realize,
club, isn't it? You know what I
right?
mean? There's no expansion in the Ivy League.
No, expansion, no realignment. Paul Feinbaum brought up to me yesterday that the ACC has expressed interest in some of the ACC schools that are good academic schools have expressed interest in joining the Ivy League. That'll never happen. The Ivy League wants no part of them. They've got their eight schools. They're all good academically. They're all committed to the idea that they're going to play good football, but they're not going to sell their souls. They're not going to be NILs. The transfer portal is almost non-existent in Ivy League schools. Last season, Princeton's quarterback was the first transfer that they had had at Princeton since 1988 when Jason Garrett transferred from Columbia because his dad got fired at Columbia. So, the Ivy League's unique. They play 10 straight weeks. There are no bye weeks. They don't play postseason, which I disagree with. I think the presidents should let the champion play in postseason like they do in all other sports. But it's 10 straight. It's a sprint and a marathon at
You
this.
can't play a bowl game if you go to an
Oh,
Ivy League
no.
school, right?
No. Well, Ivy League schools are
Well, I mean,
SEC.
every kid, that's what the coach is selling. The coach is selling, even at Navy, the coach is selling a bowl game, right?
Well,
Like,
sure.
you have that. And I know you've written about Navy and Army. We'll get into all of your books and why you picked this one specifically, but you're bringing up things that, like, you're saying I'm so shotgun. I'm like, hold on. Because I don't. I've been covering sports a long time, 40 years, newspaper guy, all that. Did all the box scores in the Agate back in the day. And, I don't know what makes Holy Cross different than Yale. I know they play each other once in a while, but I also grew up when I was 7, 8 years old, and I knew Harvard was different and Yale was different because John Kennedy, you know what I mean? Like, I knew
Right.
all of that stuff in the 70s, but the sports side of it, I still had maybe never until 30 seconds ago thought, you can't go to a bowl game. Oh my God. Like, I
Well,
don't know that I've ever thought about it that way.
let me clarify. The Ivy League plays in the FCS. They don't play in the FBS. They wouldn't go to bowl games under any circumstance, but they would play in the FCS tournament, which seems to be won by North Dakota State every year. But they,
Do they
it's a
ever play Division One teams, or am I dreaming? That never
not
happens.
anymore. Not anymore.
Oh, okay. I feel like that. Maryland could have played Harvard in a football game 25. It feels like they could have.
Well, years ago, when the Ivy League was first playing football in the 19th century and the early 20th century, they won national championships.
So they never play outside of their conference? Is that what you're
No, they
telling?
do. They play three non-conference games. But you mentioned Holy Cross, which is an FCS power. Harvard played them last year and actually beat them, which was quite an upset. They play Patriot League teams like Fordham, teams that Towson they could play. which has been very good at times in the FCS. But so they play seven conference games against the other seven teams, and then they play three non-conference games. And they're all played in 10 weeks, as I said. They play Lafayette, they play Lehigh, teams like that out of conference, and then they play seven conference games.
It felt like their league in my agate fell between whatever the conferences were at that point and put them in like they were. I think of them in that scope. And
Right.
I obviously, Towson and North Dakota State, they are what they are and how they play in that. And the whole NILs screwed all of this up. Give me your background in college and because you're famous for writing about Indiana. You're famous for writing about Duke. You're famous, and Dukey V gets associated with places, but you're associated with Maryland in a big way. What did you know as a young man about Ivy Leagues, and what even drew you to this book, and things that you learned that I'm learning right now? Like, I feel like a dumbass for not knowing this stuff, being on the radio for 40 years. I feel ignorant. I really do.
Well, you shouldn't feel ignorant. Everybody has their likes, their loves, their dislikes. But I grew up in New York City, and I used to ride the subway, the number one train, up Manhattan to the tip of Manhattan, and I went to Columbia games at Baker Field as a kid. Columbia was terrible, but they played teams like Yale with Calvin Hill. They played teams like Cornell with Ed Marinaro. So I grew up watching Ivy League football. You could buy a ticket for $4 on game
So it was
day.
very accessible for you.
Oh
It's what
yeah,
you, okay.
very
They
accessible.
played on Saturdays.
They all played Saturday
It was a
afternoon.
place you could get on the train and go to a game, right? For you.
Easily. And
How
excuse
many
me.
options did you have? And because Manhattan didn't have a lot of football, right? I mean, like
No,
it, right? I mean, literally, right?
my parents used to take me to one Army game a year. Army was about an hour away from us, but I regularly went to Columbia games. It was a way to see college football, and I could buy a ticket for $4 and sit on the 40-yard line on game day. So I enjoyed it. And after I went away to college, I still followed the Ivy League because I've been following it all my life. Columbia had a good basketball team back then. You might remember Jim McMillan, who played on Lakers championship teams later. But when I went to the Post, whenever there was an Ivy League story worth writing, I would ask to write it. I would volunteer it because I knew I would get a good interview out of whoever the player was. I knew I'd get access, that they would set me up to talk to him. And so I kept following the Ivy League, and the Ivy Leagues had some very good basketball teams, as you know. Penn went to the Final Four in 1979. Princeton went to the Sweet 16 2 years ago. Harvard went to the second round 2 years in a row. So they've had good
Princeton has a
basketball.
long history of
Long
basketball
history, and so does Penn.
and a unique style, quite frankly. There's a Princeton way of doing
Well,
things, right?
yeah, Princeton offense that Pete Carril invented. So I did a book, you may or may not remember it, 20 years ago, called The Last Amateurs, that was about Patriot League basketball. And my agent, my publisher, my editor, and Bob Woodward, who's been an advisor for me for 40 years, said, "Why would you write a book on that? Nobody will buy it." Well, as it turned out, it was a bestseller. And the reason it was a bestseller was because you don't have to be rich and famous, Nestor, to have a great story to tell. I learned that when I was a police reporter years ago, that people who were involved in accidents or shootings or whatever could have stories to tell. So after I did my book on David Faraday a couple of years ago, I went to my editor and said, "I'd like to do a book on Ivy League football. I'm still fascinated by it and by the kids who play it." And fortunately for me, he had read The Last Amateurs and liked it and knew it had been a bestseller. So he said, "That's a great idea. Let's do it." So I did it. And I could not have had more cooperation or access from the eight schools and the players and coaches. It was terrific.
This is where the writer in me wants to hear about the outline of this and, more a modern version of a book you already wrote, sort of a different way, in a different conference, in a different time. And you've done 50 books. So, I mean, my God, dude, I stopped at three or three and a half, about four on Angelos, and I'm like, I'm done. I don't need any more deep dives. But first off, the fact that you keep writing them means people keep reading them. And I think that that's a really important thing that when I wrote my last one, I lost hope in the country when I talked to people who had never read a book in their life, but loved the Ravens and had a purple
Okay.
basement. So writing sports books, to your point, finding the audience. Well, you got a pretty literate group of people. I'll wax political in a moment, and I'm gonna you said Woodward, so I'm gonna say Washington Post, and we'll talk about the T word and the new presidency. But what is the Ivy League today? I mean, I think of Bush and Yale. A dear friend of mine gave a speech locally, Jason Pappas, big Yale guy, gave a speech yesterday that I listened to. I think a good pizza in New Haven when I've been there. Princeton, I
Great
think of
pizza.
basketball, and I had a friend that went. I think of my friends that went there, Dartmouth being in New Hampshire. I don't know much other than famous, who went to Brown or who went to a place.
Right.
I don't think of them as a sports place. I do think of it as sort of a weird place for a lot of money and a club and some sort of reverence in a way that probably would make me itch a little bit being a Dundalk guy,
Well, understandable, and the Ivy League is known first and foremost for elite academics and for kids who pay a lot of money to go to school there. Now, there are no athletic scholarships in the Ivy League. So if you recruit a football player, basketball player, whatever, you have to come up with a financial plan for him to go to that school. Now, they are generous in terms of financial aid, particularly for athletes, as you might expect. But you have to understand going in, you're not going to get any NILs. Nobody's going to have a $20 million payroll for a team in the Ivy League. You go there to go to college. You are expected to go for 4 years. You are expected not to transfer. Very few players leave the Ivy League because even if they're unhappy with their football life, and that happens with Ivy League schools like with anybody else,
and they
they're
worked their whole
happy with
friggin' life to
school.
get into Dartmouth. They're not leaving, right?
Exactly.
Right,
Exactly.
literally,
Harvard
right?
starting
Yeah.
quarterback was
Unless they're
benched last
flunking
year.
out or having a mental health, I mean,
That's
having a
different.
crisis. But right, I mean, but this is the serious of serious people go making it this far, right?
Well, last year, Harvard starting quarterback got benched halfway through the season. He was a junior, and he was told that there was a kid named Jaden Craig, who was a sophomore, who was going to take his starting spot. Well, in today's world, most kids in that situation would transfer. They'd go somewhere where they could play. They'd go somewhere maybe where maybe they could get paid. Well, he didn't leave. He's going to graduate. He's played wide receiver this season, and he's going to graduate next spring because you don't leave Harvard. You've already put 3 years into a Harvard education. You don't walk away from that. Or Dartmouth, as you said, or any of the Ivy League schools. Kids really do not transfer. And as I said, they're not paid. They don't get involved in bidding wars for how much they're going to get paid to play football. They just play football
How
because
many
they want
kids
to
are on
play
these
football.
campuses these days, John? I don't even know. Like, how many kids go to Harvard? How many kids play football? And then I would ask you, how many kids like flunk out of Harvard? You know what I mean? I would just think like, as a kid that worked hard to get as good as I could get on my SAT scores, and they were better than Chris Washburn's, but probably less than yours. I was an okay student, but I was an okay student trying to go to Towson or trying to go to Maryland or trying to go to Delaware, trying to, I went to UB, right? And to community college. But I remember that pathway 40 years ago as a kid. What does that feeling look like having you spent some time there now for the non-football player?
Well, most of the kids, the schools are range from Dartmouth, which is about 3,500, 4,000, to Harvard, which has about 8,000, 9,000. So they're smaller than public schools. And they also, when you go there, if you get in there, you have higher SATs than you or me. And you're smart and you know what you're walking into. You know, if you go to one of those schools, it's going to be hard academically. So most kids, having gotten the chance to go there, to go to one of those schools, are going to work hard enough that they rarely flunk out. That's not because it's easy. It's because they work hard and because they're smart. That's how they got into an Ivy League school in the first place. And every once in a while, because of family tragedy or something that forces them to transfer, I'm talking about kids in general, not just athletes, they will transfer. But it's very rare. 95% of the football players who go to an Ivy League school graduate 4 years later. And there's no fifth year. Unless you have a season, an injury that causes you to miss the whole season, and then you have to apply in order to come back for a fifth year. It's very rare. They also don't let graduate students play So, in other words, if you played somewhere and you want to transfer into Harvard for a grad student year, you can't do it. You have to be an undergraduate in order to play at Harvard or Yale or any of the other Ivy League schools.
There's no side door in.
Right. There's no
Just like there was
side
no side door for you or me to get into Harvard, right?
door. Well, the funny story is my dad was a teacher at Yale. He was an adjunct professor there. And being a Depression era kid, he'd gone to City College in New York, couldn't afford to go to an Ivy League school, and very much wanted me to go to an Ivy League school. And I had a chance because I was a decent swimmer. And I got into Yale, I got into Duke, and I wanted to go to Duke because of the weather, because of the basketball, because it had a great swimming pool. Yale had this old pool in the basement where you could smell the chlorine once you walked into the building. So I told him I wanted to go to Duke, and he was giving me all the reasons to go to Yale. And I said, Dad.
Oh wow. So your dad, like,
Oh,
I
he
was
wanted me to
gonna
go to Yale.
ask you how many of the next question's about football players and legacy, but like I think of these schools as like not that you have to know somebody, it's almost like somebody in your family had to go there, not just know
Well, it's
somebody.
it doesn't help as much as you might think. One of my best friends, Jackson Deal, he and his wife both went to Yale. They had a daughter who was, like an ace student all through high school, and she didn't get in,
Oh,
even
she
with
must have been
two
crushed,
legacies.
right? I mean, like
She
in
was.
that,
I mean, it
yeah.
ended up fine. But yeah, she was crushed.
So you
And
had a chance and you were getting pushed into it and
yes,
you pushed out of it.
I did. And
Wow. All
I said
right.
to my dad finally, I've got to go to college, Dad, where I want to go, not where you want me to go. And he said, well, you didn't even apply where I wanted you to go. I said, well, what are you talking about? He said, I wanted you to go to Harvard. I said, Dad, you never said a word about Harvard. He said, well, I knew you couldn't get in there. So it's not easy no matter who you are, or even if you're an athlete, it's not that easy. One of the things that happens a lot with Ivy League schools is they'll recruit a kid. He's a good student because he has to be, and admissions won't take him because they don't think he's a good enough student. So it is different. I mean, anybody, if anybody applies to an ACC school who's an athlete and the coaches want him, they get in. You know that, I know that, we all know that. Gene Banks, the great player at Duke, had like 650 on his boards, but he got in because he was a great player. And Bill Foster said, "We need him." Excuse me, Nestor, to rebuild, and he came and he went, became a star. He also graduated in 4 years. Because he was, it was one of those cultural bias things with the SATs. He's an inner city black kid, and his SATs didn't reflect how smart he is, which is one reason I'm not a big SAT fan. But the point is that if you go to one of these schools, you're not going to get an NIL. I can say that. You're probably not, almost certainly not going to transfer. And the reason for the title of the book, The Ancient Eight, is you're not going to be part of another league. At any point, you're going to be part of the Ivy League because the Ivy League has been the Ivy League since 1954. Eight schools, same eight schools, will be the Ivy League in 50 years from now. Same eight schools.
Last thing on the book is that question of first off, the plot of the book and all of your plots seem to be a season, on the brink or in the muck, whatever it is. And I think this is sort of peeling back the onion of a story for what you researched last year. But storyline, and then the other part of that is how many little Feinsteins were there out there that played football at school X whose kid was on a team. Like I eight schools, I'm wondering how many legacy running backs, linemen whose dad was Matt Burke, for lack of a
Yeah,
better.
well, there were legacies, and probably the most famous one, Ed Marinaro, finished second in the Heisman Trophy voting in 1971 and went on to play for the Vikings for 10 years. His son, Eddie, is a wide receiver at Cornell right now. So there are certainly instances of that where kids whose fathers or grandfathers played football or didn't play football, but often did, who are playing in the Ivy League today. There's quite a bit of that. And almost always they're kids who made the decision to go Ivy League because of their family background. As for the plot here, I never anticipate a plot going into a book. I just try to let my reporting lead me. And I had no idea when I started this book that Buddy Tevens, the coach at Dartmouth, was going to be killed when he was hit by a truck while riding his bicycle on vacation in March of 2023. He lived for 6 more months, but he was never got out of the hospital. He lost a leg. I mean, it's a tragedy, horrible tragedy. And Sammy McCorkle, who had been his assistant coach for 19 years at Dartmouth, took over. First, he was an acting coach, then he was an interim coach, and then they finally made him the coach in October. But he took over. They had lost another, they'd lost a player to cancer during the offseason. I mean, it was a nightmare up at Dartmouth. And they ended up tying for the Ivy League title. They won their last three games and tied with Yale and Harvard for the Ivy League title. Amazing story. I never anticipated that would be the part of the story, but it was a huge part of the story, obviously.
Well, the book is out. Please go purchase it on the Ancient Eight. John Feinstein is our guest, of course, one of our defending champions around here. And I'll bring you back on. We'll talk about the book and the Ivy League and all that stuff. I'll be smarter by then, because you're going to make me smarter. Last football
Look,
thing.
you'll get smarter.
Well, before we get into the new American democracy and what constitutes leadership, which we've question before, Lamar and where we are in the Lamar story and the journey, and whether he wins this week, last week, Pittsburgh week, Chargers week, whenever anybody hears this around the holidays, even in the midst of a third sort of MVP run here. I talked to John Eisenberg, one of our mutual friends, and in your author club, about his book on black quarterbacks and the whole history of all of that. But what do you make of Lamar's going to be a hell of a book at some point, and not many people know much about him in a way, and he's not marketed in that way. Third
Right.
MVP here. It's like, and maybe the Super Bowl comes this year. Maybe it never comes. Who knows? But a guy like you would be a guy that would probably want to get in there and dig on something like this and learn something because he's doing something sort of supernatural here, right?
And supernatural is a good word, Nestor, because remember, 31 teams passed on him when he came out of Louisville. And if it hadn't,
Twice. He was a free agent.
and then he was a free agent, good point. But when he came out of Louisville, excuse me, credit to Ozzie Newsome and Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh and Steve Bisciotti, because they looked past the stereotypes about black quarterbacks, as John Eisenberg wrote. And the fact is that because Lamar was black and because he was fast, they wanted to make him a wide receiver or a running back. And that was a stereotype that existed really until Lamar. Lamar changed the way scouts looked at black quarterbacks. A year later, Kyler Murray was the first pick in the draft. And this past year, the first two picks in the draft were both black quarterbacks, Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. And before 2018, I don't believe that would have happened. And in fact, the year before Lamar came out, who was the number two pick in the draft for the Chicago Bears? Mitch Trubisky, the immortal Mitch Trubisky. And they passed on Patrick Mahomes, and they passed on Watson, who back then was a great player and was a great player until his personal problems emerged a few years ago. So what Lamar has done is he has changed the stereotype. It's not just that he proved that he could be a great quarterback. He has changed the stereotype. He's won two MVPs. There's a good chance he'll win a third. You know, Dan Marino never won a Super Bowl. He's in the Hall of Fame. Dan Fouts never made a Super Bowl. He's in the Hall of Fame. I believe Lamar will win a Super Bowl or more than one Super Bowl. He's only 27. But that question is still out there because he hasn't done it yet. And it's le a legitimate question to raise.
Well, I think in the case of Lamar, for me, now that I can do revisionist history on my own words, which are you can find anywhere on YouTube from the day he was drafted on, I've never liked quarterbacks running into linebackers. I've never thought that's a good recipe. This had nothing to do with race. It had nothing to do with rebuilding the entire team around him, which, if you draft a Lamar, you're not committed to a quarterback. You're committed to a different way of thinking and a
Well,
different
it's
way of thinking
interesting.
about
I don't
your
want to
running game,
interrupt,
too.
but the day after he got drafted, Joe Flacco, who I was writing about then in my quarterback book, called his wife, and his wife said, "What does this mean?" And he said that day, it means everything has changed. It means they are going to change the offense for him because you don't draft somebody number one without planning to build your offense around him.
And it was a late first round pick. They got the extra year. I mean, Joe describes that year as the worst year of his life, right? Like
Yeah, he was miserable.
just everything about it was awful. And and I could sense that countenance having been around there for a decade and being in the locker room and feeling it all. But so Lamar enters to that. Enters on a Super Bowl winning quarterback on a big contract, getting semi hurt, and then Wally Pipped, kind of sort of, loses
Right.
the first playoff game when everybody's screaming to get him in there. I mean, We got a book here, right? Mom's the agent. Nobody can handle that. He doesn't
Right.
really do any marketing, and when he does, it looks like a Saturday Night Live skit. That
Right.
whatever that gym thing was, he told a fan to perform fellatio. I mean, like crazy, crazy stuff. And we're only 6 years. I mean, and it looks like he's going to be able to do this. And a couple things have changed: rules for quarterbacks and sliding and getting out of bounds and avoiding contact, which he's gotten better at. He wasn't great at it in the beginning, and it cost him a couple of seasons, cost him a couple of late seasons. And then there's this horse of a running back they brought in. And John, I'm not smart about much. You've known me 4 decades, so you know I'm not real smart. But I got the receipts on this. I tweeted out back before I got the blue skies about a year ago. I actually put it on Facebook. Trading deadline last year, there was some scuttlebutt that they could get Derrick Henry. And I put out the tweet, said, too bad they didn't get him. It really would have made them unstoppable. I guess we'll never know. That was like a November 4th thing. They got him. It certainly feels like what they've done here. And to your point, he'll win a Super Bowl because they're going to be good at putting things around him. He's not in Cleveland. He's in Baltimore, right? And so being in the middle of this and feeling it sort of again, you do get the vibe that there's a this is we're writing a Jordan-esque kind of book, a game changer, paradigm shift kind of book.
Yeah, I also think Lamar's a lot more thoughtful than Jordan. Jordan was a guy who said, "Show me the money," and still does. And instead of listening to Dean Smith after he got out of college, he listened to David Falk, the sleazebag agent. And that changed his life a lot for the worse. And Jordan's done fine, don't get me wrong. But I think Lamar is a thoughtful guy. I think he's a bright guy. I think he will do good things away from football. And I think right now, though, the question with this year's Ravens is the defense. We know the offense will score. As you said, adding Derrick Henry to Lamar, the offense has scored, will score a lot of points. But it's also a defense that gave up 29 points to a Cleveland team that hadn't scored 20 all year. So I worry about the defense. I worry about how they'll do against good teams in postseason on the defensive side of the ball. But it's not going to be Lamar's not going to be the reason they lose. The reason they lose, if they lose, will be the defense.
I think the thing that they realized in scouting him, and everybody else is calling him a running back and a wide receiver, and this is another chapter in the book, is just the growth mindset and the belief that he could get better at throwing the football, that he was already very good, but he was
Right.
underrated, and you want to make him something he's not. But he threw long balls, he threw for a lot of yards, reading defenses, working in pistol, revamping the offense, having wide receivers that could block early on, guys like Willie Snead that played angry, having a tight end, all of that. Now the running back part, but the part for him that had to come that a lot of guys didn't believe in, a lot of guys, a lot. A lot of football guys, a lot of quarterback guys, a lot of coaches. They just didn't think that he would get better at throwing the football.
Yeah, and he's gotten better at everything that he does, Nestor. You're talking about reading defenses. You're talking about making decisions on the fly. And he has improved at throwing the football. And great athletes improve. I mean, go back to Jordan. Jordan was not a great shooter in college. He was a great athlete and he made plays, but he was not a great shooter. Then in the NBA, he made himself into a great shooter. That's why he was unstoppable. And Lamar has made himself into a better passer, a more accurate passer. He always had the strength of arm strength, but now he's a more accurate passer and he makes better decisions with the football.
Did you not write one of your books, maybe the 23rd book on the Baltimore Ravens of Kyle Bowler? And as
Did.
Brian Billick once said to you, and I don't know if it's in your book or not, but I know he said it to me a million times as my business partner, your potential is going to get me fired, son. And Kyle Bowler was one of those guys who could throw the ball over them there mountains like Uncle Rico, but and I love Kyle. I mean, Kyle, good person. I mean,
Never meet a
but
better guy.
I ran into him on vacation with my wife. We were in Maui, our first time we'd ever gone to Hawaii. First 5 minutes we're in Hawaii, put our stuff down in the room, went down to the pool, and I'm in the pool, and it's me and Kyle Bowler and his kids. Just it was like something out of like what the Twilight Zone, And we
Right.
caught up and we had dinner together. We wound up I had a Hawaiian vacation with Kyle Bowler and his Miss California wife, Carrie Prazer. So like, and their kids were lovely. But he was a guy that the belief was we can have him throw the ball better. Yet when Lamar came, a lot of teams said, well, he's never going to throw the ball well enough. And That's an interesting book unto itself as Raven history between you and me.
Yeah, it is. And one of the very few mistakes that Ozzie Newsome ever made, because they were wowed by Kyle Bowler in the interview during the combine. And he'd had a great senior year at Cal, and he was a terrific kid. And they said they traded to get a number one pick so they could draft him. And it just never worked out, unfortunately. And as you said, he worked at it. They brought in Jim Fossil to coach him, and it just didn't work out. But again, you'll never meet a better kid, better person. He's not a kid.
Well,
Than
that's how hard it is, though. That when you
oh,
have all the
yeah,
skill set, you have
absolutely.
the tools, you've done it, everybody believes in you for every, Joey Harrington's and Jamarcus Russell. Just go through it. It's just anytime you're Tom Brady, it's just an incredible story, right? Even Patrick Mahomes, plenty of teams, he wasn't
He
number
was the
one with a
10th
bullet,
pick.
right? Yeah.
He was the 10th pick in the draft. And as I said, the Chicago Bears that year traded up to get Mitchell Trubisky. And where is Mitchell Trubisky right now? He's backing up in Buffalo, whereas Patrick Mahomes has already won three Super Bowls.
John Feinstein is always generous with his time. Please go buy his new book, his old book. He's got 50 of them. Buy the 50 catalog. Are you doing that one yet? All gold-plated? Like, I hope he is. You can find all of his books. It's John Feinstein books. All right, break in the action here. We don't stick to sports, guys like you and me, and you Dukies and Yaleys and just tell me whatever you want to say. I mean, Woodward, the Post, where we're going. I don't think you're gonna quell my fears. You may fan
I
them.
don't think I will, because I probably have the same fears that you have. I was, needless to say, as somebody who's worked at the Post for 45 years, disappointed when the Post did not endorse anybody for president. That was a Jeff Bezos thing. It was not the editorial board. In fact, for a while, it looked as if the editorial board might resign en masse, but they were talked out of it by cooler heads, and I'm glad that they were. But that was a huge disappointment. Bob Woodward has been a friend, a mentor, and a hero since I worked for him on the Metro staff when I first got to the Post. He taught me more about being a reporter than anybody I ever knew, or any, certainly anybody I ever worked for. And he's still a friend to this day. And I have his new book. I have not yet read it. I've been very busy since I moved, but I'm certainly going to read it, because if Bob wrote it, it's true, and it's full of stuff that you and I both don't know.
How about simple as that, right? Like that's all. So are you shocked by the outcome of any of this? And I guess in my heart of hearts, this might be the first conversation I've had on the air about it. That's how much I respect you, because I do this all day long, but I don't have to talk about it, but I will. The morning after the Biden debate, and it was so obvious that
Right.
the Democratic Party's putting a cadaver up is an incapable a president who's not with it all the time, the
Right.
way we need. It's not John Kennedy in his prime, right? So the then Kamala's going to be involved in this, and she's just put up, and there's no primary. So my independent friends went nuts. The
Right.
Republicans are like, you don't even what the hell? I know Gavin Newsom this much through people and whatever, and I'm like, he could win. I mean, I'm thinking to myself, who are they going to put up? They can't do this. Please don't turn the country over. Don't let Trump just take the country. Put up some. And there was, and if, my first thought was, they didn't vote for Hillary 8 years ago, but
Right.
Obama got elected twice. Is it a male thing? Is it a black thing? Is it a competency thing? It's certainly not. He's a criminal, and she's the kind of person that puts criminals away, and that's all she's ever done. And that she's incompetent, or hadn't been a senator, or hadn't been the real vice president. I don't know that she should have been more capable in the vice presidency to feel like it's there. They didn't want to usurp what he was supposed to look like. I mean, just all of it. Now that I'm here writing post-mortem on all of it, I would say that I felt a lot of confidence as it went on, but that's just that to me is I bought into the liberal message a little too hard to
Yeah, I
think that
probably
it was
did
just going
too.
to happen, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you put a lot on the table there. Biden did have to drop out after that debate. There was no question in my mind about it, and obviously no question in a lot of minds about it.
And
And
he's still
then,
the president as we sit here and talk right now, 5 months later.
exactly right. And there was no, we didn't know enough about Kamala Harris. for to have her run for president. Usually, when you run for president, you go through the primaries and people get to know you. They get to know who you are and why you want to vote for them. We never had that chance with Kamala Harris, and I voted for her clearly, but the Democrats did not handle the whole situation well. Granted, it was a very difficult situation to have a president who can't really run for re-election, isn't mentally capable of running for re-election, and yet he was going to be the nominee until the debate happened. And I was like you. Towards the end, I started to think she was going to win. I thought because Trump was acting so crazy that people would say, you know, we can't elect him president. But I was wrong, way wrong. I
I
mean,
went to the Garden last week for the Pink Floyd thing, and I realized 7 days earlier there was literally a hate rally going on in there. I mean,
and that's what he does, and he does it very effectively. And now he's going to be the president, and he's going to have both houses of Congress. And I have no idea what's going to happen, but I'm not very optimistic right now about what's going to happen in this country. And it's a symptom of what's going on in this country. Steve Kerr and I are very good friends, and his politics are the same as mine. And I sent him a text the day after the election about how unhappy I was, and he said, "This is what our country is now." And he's right. I mean, that's what elections are for, to determine the direction of the country. And the direction of the country right now is towards Donald Trump.
well, it's amazing that they say sports and politics don't mix, and you tell Steve Kerr's family that, or you tell Popovich, you know what I mean? The
Yeah,
people
exactly.
that stand out on the front lines of all of this to discuss it and try to do it capably. I'm out of words. Love you, miss you. We'll go to a basketball game. I still trying to. Dick Girardi keeps telling me about the Palestra. I haven't been to a basketball game there.
Oh, you
Tis
got
the
to go to the
season.
play.
Yeah, I mean, maybe one day jump in the car. We'll go get a cheesesteak, go to Palestra, or take a train or something. But like, I got to get out and circulate a little bit. And the NIL thing, I can't begin to tell you how much it's just been a damper on my spirit for college sports in a general, just my interest. Like, so I'm trying to stay engaged in the sports thing in some way. But I think what's going to
Right.
happen in the country is far more interesting in the next couple of years.
Unfortunately, but if you go to the Palestra, so I highly recommend it.
You just broke up on me. Say that again. If I go to the Palestra, what?
If you go to the Palestra, you won't see any NILs. You won't see kids transferring up 5 minutes later. You'll see Ivy League athletes playing college basketball, just as in the just I get nervous sometimes, just as in the Ancient Eight, you'll be reading about real college athletes and real college students.
Kids play basketball too and football?
It has happened. I don't think currently anybody does,
No, I just think, they
because
don't
the
have a lot of
basketball
kids on
team,
some of these campuses, you
well,
know?
the best story about that is a kid named Joey Slackman, who went to Penn as a wrestler, 4.0 GPA, from kid from Long Island, went to Penn as a wrestler, decided he missed playing football, which he'd done in high school, and he walked on the football team and ended up 4 years later as the Ivy League Defensive Player of the Year. And his career ended one game before the finish. He ripped up his collarbone making a tackle.
Oh,
And the
then he
game
couldn't
was on the
wrestle, right?
what?
Then he couldn't wrestle after that.
Well, he couldn't play football after that for
Right.
several weeks. He had to have surgery. But at that moment, the doctors told him his college career was over. And the game went into overtime. And in the second overtime, as Harvard was driving toward what would have been a winning score, he said to his coach, Ray Piano, "I'm going back in." And he said, "But you're hurt. You need surgery." "I don't care. I'm going back in. I'm not ending my college football career standing on the sideline." He went back in and made a goal line tackle with a broken collarbone. And the game, he pushed the game into a third overtime where Harvard did win. But he said, "I went out on my terms. I went out as a football player, not standing on the sidelines." And he ended up not only as a defensive player of the year, but was recruited by 30 FBS schools for a grad year and is now playing at Florida.
Look at this, these stories you come up with, the things that John Feinstein can unearth when unleashed on the Ancient Eight campuses, including Yale, where I guess you spent some of your formative time as a kid. When I need a New Haven pizza recommendation, I'm coming to you. All right,
I
is that
got a
good?
couple. There are a lot of good ones.
That's what I hear. I'm going to go real hungry, just like when I go to Manhattan. Go get the book, The Ancient Eight. It's out for the holidays. John is out doing the media tour. Always a pleasure to spend time with you. We'll pray together for the future of America and the and college sports. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.